Here we go. Says to turn down the volume. Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Excellent answer. Alrighty, how about stations with, I did that already. A little preoccupied here, boys. Alrighty, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT. And the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is open to all radio amateurs, licensed to operate in the 2-meter band. And basically, it's a little different than most nets in that it's a conversation. It's about a conversation about amateur radio, telecommunications, electronics, computers, propagation, the underlying science, what we've done with amateur radio, what we'd like to do with amateur radio, things that went well, things that did not go well, all lessons learned type stuff. So hopefully we'll have a conversation. One other thing about this net is that it's really helpful to have people check in, even if they don't have questions or comments for the net. Because that way we kind of know who's out there, and we kind of steer the conversation for that purpose. The net's also available via Echolink, and I am watching for stations checking in today. To see if anybody else joins us, and if I do see someone on the Echolink console, I will bring them into the net. So, this net also allows people to come in with questions, comments, and for sale or swap items as well, or you can say none of the above, so do keep that in mind. Alrighty, so with no further ado, let's do this in an orderly manner. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter alpha, please check in with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, a comment, a for sale or swap item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
KC2T, Paul in Yonkers, New York. None of the above. I'll just be listening. If anything comes up, I'll pop in.
Evening, Paul. Very good. I got you in here. Very nice. And any other alpha stations? Alrighty. How about whiskey stations?
N2OEL disconnected. Connected. N2OEL.
WI2W.
Good evening, Steve. WI2W. We had a lot of conflicts there because the Echolink has no soul, if you will. Noel, I'll get to you in a minute. Don't worry. Steve, what's your pleasure?
None of the above. Just hanging out.
Very cool. Thank you very much. Alrighty. Any other whiskeys?
WA2UMP, good evening, Gordon. This is Jim in Pearl River, just listening this evening.
Very good, Jim. Nice to hear you. Any other whiskeys?
Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy in Washington Township, with a couple of comments.
Okay, Randy, very good. I got you covered. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, just listen.
Evening, Charlie. I haven't heard from you in a while. Your name came up a couple of times in the last couple of weeks when I was chatting with Bob Armbruster. It's not a him, but I know you know Bob, so I helped him with a talk on Vatican II that he gave to a bunch of seminarians in the Philippines. He's going to give again to a different group of seminarians next time he travels there in a month or so. And he tried the new talk out on parishioners at our church. So, very good. Alrighty. Any other whiskeys?
W2JEK, Don with a comment.
Very good, Don. Got you covered. Any other whiskeys?
W2APP, Paul, none of the above.
Leaving Paul. Anybody else on the whiskeys?
Whiskey 2 November in the whiskey. Handles Matt.
Very good evening, Matt. Good hearing you. What's your pleasure?
Just joining the masses. Just want to be with everybody else on the net tonight and see what we can learn.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Matt. Any other whiskeys? All right, the non-Echo Link Novembers. Any Novembers? Okay, let's go to N2OEL. Mr. Noel, how are you? What's your pleasure?
One question. N2OEL.
Very good, Noel. Got you covered. Alrighty. Any other Novembers while I'm here? Alrighty, the Kilo 2s.
The 2EIR, Howie in Tarrytown, and nothing except, I'm sorry I missed everyone at lunch. Over.
Very good, Howie. Well, you missed me at lunch too, and Nancy, because we had to go to Eastern Connecticut to actually north of the casinos a little bit to basically attend a funeral mass and burial for her aunt. But the positive side was that all the aunt's kids were in. I say kids, the three of the four who were alive, and they're all over 50. As are we, so it was a hoot, because these are like brothers and sisters to my very much only child wife, so it's really important, so we had a great time with that. Alrighty, did miss you though. And any other Kilo 2s?
Hey, 2-0, got one simple question, back connect.
Okay, Jim, I gotcha, very good. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2BC, no questions or comments.
Kilo Bravo 1, India Fox Yankee, just listening.
Yeah, I'll get to the complex kilos in a minute, just give me a second. But to look on board, Kilo Bravo 1, Fox Yankee, what's your name, just well, since you're in?
Yeah, good evening. I'm over in Stanford.
Okay, you got whacked by the Echo Link. Name again in Stanford?
Bill, Bravo, India, Lima, Lima.
Thank you, Bill. Welcome aboard. Okie dokie. Any other Kilo 2s? How apropos. Then let's take all the other kilos.
Kilo Delta 2, Delta India Golf, Don, New York, listening.
Okay, Don, very good. What's your pleasure for tonight?
I'm just listening, hoping to learn something, of course. Thank you.
Welcome aboard. Any other kilos?
KC2VMA, no questions will come.
Evening, Marco. Any other kilos?
K2ZC, did you grab me?
Yes, Dave, I got you. Who was the station who just doubled with Dave?
Gary, KD2DDK.
Very good evening, Gary. What's your pleasure?
Just listening.
Okay, very good. Any other kilos? Okay, any other stations?
Whiskey2DDQ, just listening. Richard in Clifton.
Hi, Richard. Good to hear you. Alrighty, any other stations, any call signs? Well, let's get to the matter at hand. Let's see, Don, I'm going to go with you first. W2JEK, K2BAR. Your comments, sir.
K2PA. JEK, good evening, everybody. First thing I want to announce is that the Barra Club will be running a test session, the BE test session, on Friday, November 15th at 7 p.m. And that'll be at the Westwood Regional High School. As a second comment, I've been checking the website, and this evening I noticed that the two people who one fellow got an extra and one fellow got tech at the October 12th Hamfest. I just saw that come up on the website today. So FCC is alive and well. So I'm glad to see that happening. So we have a new tech now with a call and a fellow that's officially an extra, not a temporary AE like he was, which is good. So, unless anybody has any questions for me, let me just go over the usual routine. The test fee is $15. Please bring an identification such as a driver's license or a passport or some kind of photo ID or two forms of non-photo ID. And if you have a license, please bring your current license plus a copy of that license. And if you wish to use a calculator, you may. The memory must not have anything stored in it. Other devices other than a calculator, such as a cell phone or an iPod, etc., are not permitted. With that, back to Ned, W2JEK.
Very good, Don. Thank you very much. Anybody have any questions or comments about the upcoming test session or anything about testing in general coming up? Over. Okay, Don, very good. By the way, guys, we lost N2OL from the Echo Link. I don't know where he disappeared to, but I've been watching to see if he comes back. All righty. Anything you want to add, Don?
No, thank you, Gordon. Back to Ned, W2JEK.
Alrighty, let's go to Randy then. W2TTT.
Thanks, Gordon, and good evening to everyone on the net. I have a couple of comments on two subjects here. One is on the HSMM mesh node experiments we've been doing, and specifically about the topic of enclosures. I posted to the ComTechNet recently the results of some of the work I've been doing. And the second comment is about some Anderson power pole connectors. So the regarding the buckets, I've been using buckets that I've purchased from Uline that are that use a particular type of plastic. It's called high density polyethylene. And the way you can tell this too is if you look at the bottom of the container, pretty much any plastic container, you usually see a rounded triangle, and HDPE, as it's known, will have a number 2 in that triangle, and that's how you tell what it is. In fact, most gallon milk jugs, I believe, are made of HDPE, and it's a very versatile and food-safe plastic. However, there are limitations that I wanted to bring to everyone's attention. So the primary concern is while the bucket containers with the screw top lids are very useful and versatile, they are not UV stable, ultraviolet stabilized or UV tolerant. So they're really not suitable for long-term use outside. Certainly short-term, not a problem, and you know, on the orders of days or weeks or even months, you could probably put one of these buckets outside all summer, have the sun beat down on it, and not experience any loss or failure. But it's not the kind of thing that you'd want to keep outside for several years. that. Also, there's really no way of coating it with anything, unless you, I suppose you wanted to wrap it in duct tape, which is certainly feasible, but it looked ugly as sin. One of the properties of HDPE is that it's extremely slippery and it's almost impossible to paint. I've done a bunch of research on this. There are people that have come up with some schemes for painting the outside of the smaller HDPE pieces for specific purposes, but it's not the kind of thing I'd want to try in a 3.5 or 5 gallon bucket. All of these things are pretty involved and hardly worth the effort. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention that the buckets are useful, they're certainly versatile, they're inexpensive, but they are not a long-term or a permanent solution. However, they will get you by, you know, for short-term deployments or you know, something less than a year. It'd be the kind of thing you'd probably have to replace every year. Also, the cold will, after long exposure to UV, the cold will tend to crack the plastic. A good plastic for alternative containers is polypropylene, and that would, if you were looking at the resin identification triangle, what a lot of people call it the recycling triangle, that would have a number 5 in it, and that would be a polypropylene. Polypropylene also has the same problem of not being extremely UV stable, although there are some forms of it where the manufacturer will mix a lot of carbon black into the resin as it's injected molded, and that will give it a good measure of UV stability for a longer period. How long? You can't really tell. It's a guess because you don't know how the thing was really manufactured, but it certainly helps. I've got a couple of different containers. They're called socket boxes that someone had suggested, and I'm going to bring a couple of them to the Fair Lawn Club tomorrow so you can look at them. They are black or dark gray in color, and they appear to have carbon black in them. So that's what I wanted to say about the bucket containers that we've been working on. Back to net control.
Question?
Question, go.
W2ITP. Those screw top lids from Uline, do they fit on the standard Lowe's Home Depot gallon jug?
Yes. They do. They absolutely do.
Okay, thanks.
The lids are pretty neat. The lids from Uline, and I'm sure they're available from other places. I just haven't looked for them. But the lids from Uline, I believe, are the screw top lids are $8 a piece, and they only come in 3 colors at Uline: red, white, and blue. And they do fit the sort of the standard series of buckets, 3.5 gallon, 5, 6, and 7. So they're reasonably versatile.
Yeah, it's the 5 gallon, $4.69 for the buckets versus like the $2 Lowe's without shipping. That's the sort of big thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's a lot less expensive getting at Lowe's or Home Depot. These are things that I just happened to pick up because I was ordering other business supplies from Uline anyway, and since the truck was going to come off and drop off a pallet load of stuff, throwing a few more buckets on there seemed to make sense at the time. Net control, if there are no more questions, I'd like to go on to the other topic.
Sure, and by the way, before you do, just a thought that maybe the 5 gallon bucket gives us a little more vertical space for antennas to be hanging from the lid.
inside the whole mess. I was thinking about that the other day. And possibly with the whole unit hanging from, you know, the router unit hanging from the lid, but depending on how you want to do it. But I was actually thinking of mounting the amplifier, and if there is such a thing, and the antennas from the lid. It would mean bringing both power and coax up, and an adequate slack to spiral up. But I was thinking that's actually not so bad, because I think it goes less than a full turn. But I'll have to recheck that. I do have a spin bucket, as I call them, kicking around. So let me see what I can dig up. All right, very good. Let's go to the next topic, Randy.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so we'll take up the conversation on buckets again. There's still a lot more to be learned, and I'm tempted to put some instrumentation together and sticking one of these up on the roof of my house where it's exposed to the weather and sunlight, and just leaving it up there for a year and seeing what happens to it. In some ways, that's the only way to tell. The other topic is that a number of you know that very interested in 3D printing using a couple of different technologies, and one of the things I stumbled across recently was the sort of age-old problem of Anderson power pole connectors pulling apart at inconvenient or embarrassing moments, and you know, there's been a variety of solutions to that. Somebody came up with a fairly workable design for a little plastic bracket that could be printed that you'd snap around a set of these and hold them together. The design I saw was somewhat workable. Printed off a few of them and didn't quite like the finished product, and so modified it a bit. And I printed off several dozens of these, and I'm planning on bringing them to again to Fairlawn tomorrow evening, and I'll hand out a bunch of them to people that are interested. You know, provided that you promise to give me some feedback as to whether they worked, or they're good or bad or indifferent, or you just really absolutely hate them. Doesn't really make any difference. I just want to get a bunch of feedback on people's experience with them, and you know, with an idea toward refining the thing. It's a very simple thing. It solves a very simple, straightforward problem, but it might be of use to people that use the power pole connectors frequently. This is Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net control.
Okay, I think we certainly can do that. Are you planning to bring this stuff tomorrow? What's your plan for that?
Yes, that's my plan, is to bring it tomorrow down to Fairlawn. I'll be there sometime between 6 and 6:30. So I'll have those connector locks and a couple of other things for show and tell. Back to net.
Is this the product that Howie recommended?
Okay, I'm trying to remember. I think the thing Howie was talking about was a bulkhead mount, if I recall, to hold the power pole connectors much more firmly on a bulkhead. But am I remembering that correctly?
You are. Yes, you are. Okay, that and so yours is a way just to clamp two pair together so that they don't detach.
Yes, that is correct. The idea is so that they don't detach unless you really want them to.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I mean, I'm using the little black clips that go through the center holes, but across each pair. But I'm not overly fond of those, because especially if we use the mount that he's talking about, it's not going to be very, you know, functional. Anyway, very good. Anybody else have comments?
N2OEL. Disconnected.
Okay. Very good. Anything else you want to add here, Randy?
Nope, not at the moment. That's it for me for this evening, Gordon.
Of course, I'm still here, Antonio.
Okay, I see you dropped off of Echo Link, so I wasn't sure what was going on. Okay. Welcome aboard, so we'll get you back in next. Very good, Noel. All right, thank you very much, Randy. That was awesome. All right, let's go to N2OEL.
I've been using kitty litter containers for a couple different things. One is planters, and one is to hold down tents and canopies and stuff like that. You put fill them up with water. What happens is after one season of continuous outside use, the handles crack and break. I tried painting them, forget it, the paint slides off. That was that comment. I have a question about, I'm so far out in the sticks that I think I'm going to have to be sending my email by carrier pigeon. So, is there any alternatives to getting email, internet service? Has anybody done anything like that when you're at the extreme fringe of cell phone service? Back to that, Antonio.
Okay, so I have some solutions to that, but I'll let other people go first.
W2APP.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if you're out in the sticks, the easiest is satellite. It does suck because the bandwidth is low, but, you know, it's low, but it works.
Okay, so, that's one solution. The problem with satellites is they throttle you if you get too greedy, and there's a high latency. Really high latency. So, how about this, Noel? Do you have any cell service, and you just need to give yourself, you know, a little help to get a good quality connection? Is this like a matter of putting up an antenna, maybe up on a mast outside and bringing it down to your data card? Would that be, or cell phone, if you have an external antenna capability, would that be something you'd be inclined to do? Would that be something that would be semi-functional for you?
Well, the truth is, I think I can see the cell tower across the lake, but it's got to be a good 8-10 miles away. And yes, passive repeater would be a great idea. What's funny is, sometimes it says 4G, and I can actually use Echo Link and do normal things, but 95% of the time it says E, which I guess is Edge or Extreme or whatever. That's
essentially 2G data. Okay. Well, if you're sometimes getting LTE or 4G from AT&T, that's a hopeful sign. It's not a passive repeater, it's an antenna. Does your hotspot or your phone have an external antenna connector?
No, it's an iPhone.
Okay. Well, I think that may be the issue. I think you're going to have to think about a cell data card. Maybe one day, for grins, I could take a ride up to your humble abode up there, and we could test out what I have. Just for your benefit, I have a MIMO antenna, so that means it's a dual kind of antenna in a single package, two coax feeds to go down to in this case a cell data card, like a Sierra Wireless 313 or 340 or whatever, and the antenna I'm using is an Aerialite by Wire NG. Aerialite 2, actually. Aerialite 2. That's all one word. By Wire NG. Like Wire Engineering.
But I find that to be a huge improvement over the stock inboard antennas from the cell data card. And I'm willing to bet properly positioned that that kind of MIMO antenna will close the gap for you quite easily. Over.
I remember in the early days of GPS, you couldn't get a signal inside your truck. So you put a homemade antenna outside, ran a cable, and put another homemade antenna identical next to your GPS unit. Then it worked.
Yeah, but the difference there is that I was using a pre-amplified antenna module, one of those pucks, and and as a consequence of that, I had a little bit of energy coming out that second passive antenna. This has got to be a bidirectional game, and you don't want to be caught transmitting in the cell band. You just don't.
I see. Is aerial light spelled A-E-R-I-A-L-I-T-H-T?
Yeah, with the figure two at the end.
Okay. Both DBI 3G and 4G dual external antenna for AT&T.
That's it. What you want to do is you want to, you know, I mean, I've got a cell data card. I have two. And one of them has the aerial light antenna. In fact, you've probably seen it. That flat panel antenna that I have, I sometimes bring with me. It's on the top of the super node mast. Because, you know, one of the things that we're always concerned about is making sure that we have good cell coverage. You know, we can make the Wi-Fi work, but the real trick is to make sure that the cell connection is you know, solid and in the clear. What's nice about this approach is that you would also be able to possibly clip it on a post on your motorhome, and therefore, you know, whether you're using, you know, your a fixed location or a mobile location, just take it with you, feed it 12 volts, and be done with it. Along with a router, I use an old Cradlepoint MBR 1000 and a 313 cell data card, which are pretty cheap. You can find those pretty easily. They're not current production, but they're LTE and they're plenty capable. So that's something you might want to think about. So, anywho, that'd be my suggestion. Anybody else? Okay, very good. Let's see. Kind of my suggestion, and I would, you know, recommend that you you think about that. I mean, you know, cell data card. I mean, we could test it with a little router, and they just run a Cat 5 wire down from wherever it is. In fact, you can even do probably power over Ethernet to get that to work for you. So there's some opportunity there. Okay.
Okay, but then I'd have to add $10 a month onto my plan for a second card.
Okay, but it's cheaper than buying satellite, and you'll have much more capacity. It'll work better.
Okay. The one reason I went to the iPhone was so that I could use it as a hotspot.
Okay, but, you know, like everything else, there's limitations to all good things, and, you know, for metro area purposes, it's a nice solution. I mean, different conditions require different tools, and you have two of your residences and many points in between, courtesy of your mobile home, that might put you out of what I'll call metro service areas. And so you're going to need something to augment your capacity for connectivity. And that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about repurposing an iPhone.
because, you know, we're talking about trying to do something that will supersede the performance of the iPhone because your requirements have changed and are more demanding and therefore require different tools.
Okay, but I can see money going out the window.
Well, I think the first thing we do is I take a road trip one day and we try it out. I mean, how many hours is it to your home up in New York?
263 miles, approximately 5.5 hours.
I've done dumber things in a day. All right, well, you know, we'll see. I mean, see what your requirements are in the South as we get through the winter, and after that we can then make a decision as to whether we want to try it up in northern New York with the idea that we'll also probably solve your problem on the road. And we'll go from there, okay?
Sounds good, but what you should do is come up on Saturday, and that way we can go on the boat on Sunday and operate boat mobile or mobile with that Hustler antenna.
That would be lovely. I'm surprised your boat's still in the water given where it is, but okay. Pretty good. I'd like to do that. That'd be fun. Anything else, Mr. Noel?
The boat's been shrink-wrapped and sitting in the driveway. We also bought new covers for it. It's too cold up there. You're required to have all boats out of the water by October 15th, most of the marinas. They don't play around. No, that's it. Thank you. N2OEL.
My pleasure. Okay, very good. That was a good colloquy, and you know, we'll work on that. I have your address, I think, for up there, and I can also go look at the public maps and see what that connectivity is that you're talking about. We'll go from there. All right. Mr. Jim, K2ZO, it's your ball, K2BAR. K2ZO, K2BAR. Okay, I guess not. Anybody else have any questions, comments, want to check in, et cetera? Okay, well, I'll give a little commercial here. The Big Blue Whale, as I love to refer to it, my van is going on the market, and it's going with the roof rack minus the big silver box because I took the silver box off a while ago. But if you have seen the lovely tower that I usually mount on the back and the custom piece of steel that holds the bottom of the tower and allows you to clip onto the roof rack, and then you ratchet up the tower with a ratchet drive. Where it goes real fast, about 2 minutes up, 2 minutes down. It's got power available in the utility box. It's fused in the rear. We also have power coming from the directly from the battery to the console area. The operating desk is built in, still there. My center console in the front with all my radios is gone, but the bulkhead mounting spot for it, so you can customize your own stuff, is all in there too. So if someone wants a mobile ham shack with all sorts of capability, then it's available for sale. And if you saw it on some of the lists, it's $3,500, tower and all included. So that'd be that. That's my for sale or swap item for this week. So if anyone's interested, give me a holler. There is actually somebody interested already, amazingly enough. I just have to send them pictures. But if there's somebody local, obviously they win that lottery. Just real simple. So anyway, so this is K2B.
WBAR, W2TTT, anybody else? Alrighty, sorry, one more time. K2ZO, Jim, are you back? W2TTT.
My wife is calling me for something there. Sorry about that. W2TTT at KQBAR. This is K2ZO. Yeah, I have a quickie little question. Let me let it drop a second. Okay. I recently purchased a little plug-in digital voltmeter. Plugs into the car's cigar lighter. Just to keep an idea of what's going on. And I'm quite surprised that it's reading much lower than I expected it to. It's only reading about 12.5 volts. And I said, gee, it should be reading more than that. The alternator's charged and everything. So I put a couple of clip leads on it, on the thing, and went out and clipped it across my battery. And, of course, the battery reads about 14.3, 14.4, depending on what's going on in the car with the air conditioner. So there's about a 1-volt drop from my cigar lighter as to what the actual voltage on the battery is. Is that normal in a car? I was quite surprised. Maybe that's why sometimes you don't get the results that you think you're going to get when you plug into the cigar lighter. But I repeated it a couple of times, and it's true. I took two different meters, and there's like about a 1-volt difference between, you know, right across the battery and the cigar lighter. So I'm really surprised that there's that much of a drop. But I just wonder, is that something normal? Has anybody ever done a measurement like that? Back to that, K2ZO.
Got several people. Noel first, and then whoever was underneath him. Noel first, go.
Yeah, Tony and I bought four of those things. I've been driving around with it in my Chevy. The voltage varies. The highest I've seen is 14.2 volts, and using the spread lighter, and using the auxiliary item that's used for, you know, your cell phone charger or GPS. It varies. When the vehicle was off, it's 12.9, 12.8. My Saturn, I've used it in that, and I determined my Saturn battery is glowing because it would be shut the thing off, go to ShopRite, come out, plug it in again, and the battery voltage would be down to 12.2. The fact that it would be reluctant to start also didn't have the oomph, was a dead giveaway. I just had the battery replaced today and haven't had a chance to plug it in. But they're fun to use, and I can't believe a 1-volt drop if that's the only thing that you have in that circuit, because that would imply one heck of a high resistance if this thing is only drawn 50 milliamps, maybe 30 milliamps. I mean, how much could it be possibly drawing for those LEDs? 100 milliamps? It shouldn't be a 1-volt drop. Excellent, N2OL.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. And, of course, that's it. That's the only thing I had plugged in. I just assumed that the voltage that I would measure would be like the same voltage that I see across the battery. And, of course, if I go to the alternator's output, I'll see like about 14.4, and then I go over to the battery and I see sometimes 14.4, sometimes 14.3, you know, and put the air conditioner on, it drops down a bit. But it's always about 8 tenths or a volt different when I measure it at the cigar lighter. So I don't know. I was thinking that perhaps there was a diode to isolate the cigar lighter plug. I don't know. I just wonder about that. That's the first time I ever really did that and was quite surprised to see that. I mean, it can't be that much resistance. There's only, 3 feet of wire in between. So I just thought it was interesting and make a comment because, if you plug the radio in there, it's going to draw 15 amps, it's going to have a less voltage on it than you think you've got. Maybe that's a good reason why you should always go across the battery, which, of course, I did for my radio. So just wanted to throw that out there. Somebody can make a measurement. Noel, take your digital voltmeter and measure your battery voltage while the car is running, and then measure that little gadget that you got plugged into the cigar lighter and see if they're different. That would be a good test. Back to net, K2ZO.
Hey, let me give you another one, too. Let's see. Who's the other station who wanted to jump in with a comment for Jim? I think it was W2ACC, go.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to the fact that you actually have an inverter in between your battery and what's coming out of the accessory socket. The reason you'll see the voltage fluctuate, a lot of it comes down to the state of your battery. In some ways, you know, like when I hit my power button, I'll get like a 14-volt spike that'll then sort of settle down into the 13. If the car is off, it drops down into the 12. If the battery's shot and needs replaced, I'll head into the 11. So a lot of it is a case of the car itself. I think if you sort of pull out the electrical map, you'll find an inverter in there at some point trying to regulate the voltage, but we'll still cope with the spike.
Okay, and Jim, I was checking that in various vehicles, and I saw similar results to what the other guy saw, sometimes even lower. There's something funky about, you know, the crimp wire crapola that goes on a cigarette lighter plug. Remember, they're not looking to do anything, fancy. Those things, especially in older cars, were designed to power, you know, a heater coil for a couple of seconds so that you could light up your smoke. You know, to drop to 10.5 volts and, you know, pull the boatload of current, no one cared. And we actually put stuff that's voltage sensitive on there, and there are issues that emerge, as you know. So anyway, that's, you know, that was my thought. I had a similar experience to yours also, in that when I ran even just a single piece of number 4 from the battery and used the seat, you know, the bolted to the floor seat of my van as the return path to the battery, I had virtually no material loss that way when compared to the proverbial cigarette lighter. You know, what you're noticing is for real.
Well, you know, I have 3 of them. I didn't check the other 2. I have another outlet cigar lighter thing. I guess we don't call them cigar lighter things anymore. We call them 12-volt accessory plugs. I have one in the center console. I have one, of course, in where the ashtray is. And I have one in the rear, which I thought that was pretty neat because it's right near the rear of the SUV. And you could pop the hatch up in the back there and plug something in and operate. But I just wonder what that voltage is. No doubt that's the same on that same bus. But I just couldn't figure out. I know Paul said something about there might be an inverter, but I don't know about that. Maybe. But, you know, I just thought that would be reading the same as the you know, the bus across the battery minus, you know, a tenth or two of a volt. And I was quite surprised. And, of course, it bounces all over the place, as you say, when the alternator, you know, starts pushing into the battery. So sometimes you see it pop up, sometimes it goes down. And but it always seems to be about a volt below what the voltage is across the battery. So I just thought it was kind of strange. Back to that, K2ZO.
No, that's basically true. You know, that, I think you've pretty much nailed it. Anyway, it's kind of neat. Definitely have some opportunities, you know, to fail if you're not cognizant of what's going on in the wiring.
I just think it's, you know, designed to be low current, not very fussy. I mean, a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's very excited about, you know, powering like an iPhone charger or an iPad charger or some Android thingy. Maybe your GPS. Not a lot of current, and you know how that goes. So that's kind of, you know, the mentality. And, you know, we go and we want to suck 10 amps down or, you know, 20 amps down. Sure, the damn thing, it's a pain in the ass. By the way, I have a similar outlet like that in the rear of Nancy's car. And what's really neat about that is it's switched, so it turns off when you, remove the key from the ignition and power down the vehicle. So I run it through a power gate as the source. I have a small, I guess, an 18 ampere hour battery in the tire well that's insulated next to the spare tire. And then I feed that to the Anytone radio that's mounted in the rear, with its head mounted up front. Let me drop it. So what's nice about that is that I can operate the radio from the reserve battery without the car being powered on if I should, you know, mysteriously lose that power from that battery. I can just power up the vehicle and get two things accomplished. One, I get power back on the radio, and two, I start charging the battery, the auxiliary battery. I mean, it's not so bad. So I'm finding that to be a really good technique. And sometimes I'll throw computers on there. I'll throw, you know, when I bring my 7000 in, I do the same thing. I mount the radio in the rear, bring the head up to the front with a piece of Cat 5 cable and a speaker cable coming off the head. It's all good. It's real simple. And by putting the radio right next to this auxiliary battery, it kind of bolsters and keeps the voltage sag down to a dull roar. You know, you don't need one of those boost regulators. The vehicle's running, and for short periods of time, you can run the radio without any problem, without even worrying about it, even at 100 watts. So, without the vehicle running, it's really kind of nice. K2ZL, K2BAR.
Okay, yeah, of course, the idea that I've been thinking about buying one, a boost regulator, K2ZL, that would be nice. Of course, the other thing you could always find out is that you come back and your battery is dead, so. I don't know if I have a good Sears diehard, but I know Mr. Noel will tell me don't pull it all down because it's not a deep cycle battery and you'll kill it, and I'm sure he's right. But I was thinking about putting that in the back of the vehicle and setting up the station there so I could operate, but I don't know whether I would want to tie that into the other battery. I seem to think that might cause some other problems, but we'll see. Well, maybe with a boost regulator in between it would be okay, but you'd still kill the other battery. Anyway, I'm going to make those measurements on those other two outlets, and I will let you know. It is kind of strange, but I was just thinking maybe perhaps there's just that much wiring in there and it drops, but I mean, the thing is designed. The cigar lighter, again, is designed to take at least 10 amps, I know. So you wouldn't want to put any resistance in there. Or maybe not even a diode, so. Don't know, but interesting. I'll have to try a few different cars and see what it does. Thank you. Back to that, K2ZO.
Let me ask a question. The back of your SUV, the accessory outlet in the back, that is switched, right?
Yes, in fact, all three are switched. The cigar lighter in the front there by the ashtray is switched, as well as the one in the center console, and as well as the one in the back. Actually, I wish that the one in the front was not switched because I have a charger for my cell phone that I want to plug in there sometimes. You know, if, you know, you're in the store or something like that, and you want to put some more juice in your cell phone while your car is parked there with the ignition off, it'd be very nice. Back to that.
Yeah, sometimes I do that, and I just have an outlet in the rear for that purpose. Okay, so if you have a switched source in the back, run that over to the power supply lead of a power gate, get a battery for the battery side of the power gate, and then run your equipment off the common. And when you do that, you know, you might even put a rig runner, a small rig runner back there, so that you can put a couple of things, including, let's say, heaven forbid, a 12-volt vehicular accessory socket, or something else back there, and you can, you know, just pop the trunk, leave your cell phone back there, and, you know, go to town. Come back, your battery will charge. It'll charge off the auxiliary battery, but won't suck down the main battery because it's switched off. The power gate, you know, will isolate that. In fact, you could do it without a power gate at all. Just strap it across there. You know, some people like that regulation on the auxiliary battery so that you don't overdo it. You know.
Yeah. That's- You know, my generator is so tiny, at only 43 pounds, it puts out 2 kilowatts. I could take that thing, pop it in the truck.
Yeah, but you don't want to run it with the windows closed. Hi. Speaking of which, you reminded me of something. I was at Harbor Freight yesterday for another matter related to our Boy Scout troop, and I was actually buying their 4 kW generator, and they have a 2,500 watt, that's what they say, generator that's ultra quiet, and it mysteriously looks kind of like a little brother of the Honda 2KW. Apparently it's gotten some good reviews already, and it is really, really quiet. And, oh, by the way, it's $500. Just saying, as they say. You know, I can't say it's as good as a Honda, but I can honestly say that for $500, it might be a worthwhile experiment for somebody as opposed to spending, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever it is you spend for a Honda, what do you call it, 2000, quiet generator.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wonder if it uses, I guess it uses inverter technology, and maybe you could parallel them up. Well, I love the Honda. It certainly was not cheap, but it works great, and you can get any parts you want for it. And I just love that little thing. That, we've had so much fun with it. Okay, back to that. This is K2ZO.
Yes, it is an inverter-type power supply, generator, and I'm pretty impressed by it. But a little bit I've seen already. Okie doke. Anybody else have stuff for the net?
WJBT.
Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, just to sort of follow up on this. The inverter is in there. It's basically because they really want to protect the ECM, so they really want to regulate the 12 volt to make sure there's nothing really nasty going in there. You can put a second battery in, and they do sell some really nice charge controllers. That will basically charge it when it needs to and draw when it needs to and basically shut down when the alternator's not going. I think the person you really want to go talk to is Marco, KC2ZMA. He's very good on 12-volt electronics. I think he does a lot for his job, so he might be a good resource to sort of give the definitive answer on what's going in there.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I learned a lot.
And who are you?
Hello?
On my blue van, we had a pair of deep cycle batteries in a box behind the driver's seat, and I had it professionally done. They ran 4-gauge wire from the battery. Underneath the driver's seat was a large 200-amp relay, and switch, a push button switch. And what this relay did is was hooked up